May it please the court, counsel. I would like to reserve 2 minutes if I could have your help, Judge.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. Are we ready?
Yes, and if you would introduce yourselves for us, please.
I am Deborah Sutton, representing American Family, and here with me today is Scott James, who is also with me on the brief.
Proceed.
All right. American Family comes to ask the court to reverse the trial court's decision in this case because it used an inappropriate, erroneous standard in determining whether American Family acted unreasonably or in bad faith in this case. Rather than follow this court's analysis in cases such as FAM versus State Farm and Sanderson versus American Family, and even Travelers versus Savio, the court used its own standard, an inapplicable standard, and held American Family to a higher burden in its assessment of the duty of good faith and fair dealing. This case presents a very unusual set of circumstances. It involves the interrelationship between the automobile liability claim, the underinsured motorist claim, and the subrogation claim, all of which arrived at the same intersection in this unusual situation. In this instance, American Family was the underinsured motorist carrier with $400,000 in coverage. The plaintiff sustained a catastrophic injury, we all know, and his medical expenses were $500,000 and rising, according to the record. The tortfeasor who hit him had $100,000 in coverage. Thus, there were $500,000 in insurance coverage, $500,000 in medical expenses. The Mahoneys asked American Family to go ahead and pay the underinsured motorist benefits without requiring him to settle with the tortfeasor, thereby allowing him to go ahead and later sue the tortfeasor, obtain the insurance coverage that he had, the liability coverage, as well as additional monies through from his personal funds.
I can interrupt you, Ms. Sutton, on this one, and I think we issued an order, hopefully everyone got, asking you to be prepared to address this question. The first argument, I think it's the first argument you raise in your briefs, is that American Family was fine to delay payment here as a matter of law, because the policy said we don't have to pay until we settle with the tortfeasor. As I recall the facts in this case, American Family had this little round table or whatever it called it, and essentially agreed not to pursue that issue right out of the chute, and then they turned and focused on the issue relating to Kaiser. How has American Family not waived that claim for purposes of appeal when you didn't, basically after you dropped it, you never raised it again?
We agree there was no duty to pay. The court asks about whether we waived the condition precedent under the terms of the contract, and that provision would operate to relieve American Family from paying its uninsured motorist benefits until the settlement. American Family chose not to enforce that provision, thereby waiving that provision in terms of its of payment of the benefit under the contract, thus raising the subrogation issue. But that waiver did not operate to waive any defenses American Family might have to subsequent tort claims for bad faith or statutory violations. And the tort claim of bad faith presumes a duty to pay, and that's a threshold determination. So while American Family did not dispute that it paid under its contract, and it did pay, that was not an issue. But when it comes time to analyze the tort claim, the threshold determination of a duty is important, and American Family did not waive that defense by which had not, there wasn't even a lawsuit at that point in time.
Yes, I'm trying to figure out then how do we draw the line here? And if I'm understanding, and push back on me if I'm not trying to misstate it. You're basically saying, okay, we waived our reliance on this contract contingency. We're not going to enforce that. But then can you really come back and say, after we haven't delayed for that reason, we have a whole different reason. Oh, now we can come back when we get sued for unreasonable delay and raise that issue again that you didn't pursue? I guess I'm not understanding how you could have it both ways.
In terms of an analysis of a tort, the first question is whether there was a duty. And in this case, there was no duty to pay. Until the settlement with the underlying tortfeasor or a judgment. So that goes to the tort claim. And when you're considering the claim of the breach of duty of good faith and fair dealing, the court has to consider the reasonableness of the conduct under the circumstances and the entire course of dealing between the parties. In determining this. So I think it is certainly a fact and a consideration that the court can use in determining whether American Family breached its duty in the first place. In this case, however, the trial court focused on whether it could be bad faith for American Family to require resolution of the subrogation claim asserted by Kaiser. Kaiser paid medical expenses. Kaiser sent a notice to American Family as well as to State Farm, the BI carrier, asserting a subrogation claim. And because the American Family was going to go before the bodily injury carrier, where that subrogation claim would normally be resolved because the auto carrier is not going to pay its limits without getting a release of all claims against its insureds, subrogation and liens and likewise. So because American Family stepped in first, the issue of what to do with the subrogation claim arose.
Can I ask you again, Ms. Sutton, and I don't mean to be monopolizing, but time's limited. As I understand, the district court's finding here was that it was an unreasonable delay to insist on or raise the issues about the Kaiser claim because there was no possible way, had American Family paid the full amount, it would ever be subject to a valid claim. I'm not asking you to agree with that, but do you agree that's what the court said?
I believe that is what the court did.
Right. And is that a factual determination or a legal one? I'm just trying to figure out, what's our standard of review on that part of it?
I think the court's decision in FAM versus State Farm is instructive in this situation. We had a novel situation, an unusual situation, a situation that involved a newly amended Underinsured Motorist Act that had just been changed 8 months earlier. We had an unusual claim. We had no legal authority in Colorado directly on point. In either direction. The judge erred by claiming that there was no possible way because there was no legal authority precluding such a claim in Colorado.
Let me push back a little bit on that. So you cite some case law from other jurisdictions that do say that a health insurer like Kaiser mm-hmm. can bring that claim. Let's assume for argument's sake that's right, and I think you're probably right. There aren't Colorado cases one way or the other. Let's assume Kaiser can bring that claim. On the fact presented here, how could Kaiser ever possibly win had American Family paid the entire amount? As I understand it, they raised arguably a lien claim and arguably a subrogation claim. On the lien claim, it seems to me, and disagree, that would have been a claim against Mr. Mahoney, not against American Family. On the subrogation claim, Kaiser would step into Mr. Mahoney's shoes. So if you paid, American Family paid the full amount, how could American Family ever be liable to Kaiser in a subrogation claim?
The question is not, would Kaiser have won? And that's where I think the court erred in this case. That being said, to answer your question, I think there, the law has long recognized the concept of equitable subrogation. When one person pays what another person should have paid, they are entitled to recover that. And there have been cases where an insurance company has had to pay twice because they paid the tort claimant or individual all of the funds and disregarded, for instance, an arbitration award for medical expense subrogation, and thus would have to pay it twice. And I think Ms. Clemmy explained some of those situations in her testimony during the trial. So I think it's at least an equitable subrogation claim. It is, in this case, there was a contractual provision allowing Kaiser to have a subrogation claim. And third, the test is not whether American Family would have won if they got sued. It's whether there was a reasonable basis to request that that claim be concluded under these circumstances, where it was basically stepping into the shoes of the bodily injury carrier, where that subrogation claim was therefore outstanding.
Let me ask a hypothetical on that, and I understand this is an extreme case, but what if the facts, the Kaiser asserted a clearly, totally frivolous claim? Could American Family still in that circumstance refuse to pay on the grounds that they have this claim from Kaiser?
I don't know. I think that it's reasonable for an insurance company and anybody to try to avoid being embroiled in unnecessary litigation. And the insurance company in this situation, under Bailey versus Allstate, they are entitled to consider their interests. Each party has this duty of good faith and fair dealing towards each other. And so we had a three-month delay. And during that period of 3 months, the plaintiff's attorney was in control of the negotiations for the settlement of the subrogation claim. He could have advised American Family of the amount of that claim and pursued separate payments, but chose to go ahead and settle. So when you weigh the equities here and consider that they're entitled to consider their own interests, I think that factor weighs in favor of American Family. There was at least a reasonable debate. The plaintiff's attorney in this case didn't take issue with whether Kaiser had a subrogation claim, but instead relied on the make-whole doctrine, which had not been adopted in Colorado until the enactment of 10-1-135. I need to move on to the treble damages issue, the issue of damages under CRS 10-3-1-1-1-5 and 1-1-1-6. The court erred in finding that the plaintiff was entitled to double damages in addition to the covered benefit. It's our position that where we have a statute that is in derogation of the common law, that is a penalty statute, that it must not be extended to provide any damages other than what is listed in the statute. And here, the recovery is limited to double damages. We supplied you with
the Tate case. You've passed the two-minute mark, counsel, just reminding you. You can keep finishing.
We provided you with the Tate case, which says that the contract benefits are assumed to be within the damages provision under the statute. And lastly, with respect to Mrs. Mahoney's claim, we do not believe the plaintiff has shown that the court's factual finding was clearly erroneous as to the damages sustained because of American Family versus what the auto accident was. I will reserve the rest of my time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sutton. Mr. Zimmerman.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, I'm Phil Zimmerman. I'm here on behalf of Michael and Jacqueline Mahoney. This is an unusual case, and it's an unusual case for a very simple reason. There's no question about the validity or the amount of my client's claim. There's no contributory negligence. There's no question about whether there's pre-existing conditions. There's no question about whether the treatments were medically necessary. In fact, it was clear to American Family very early and throughout this proceeding or throughout this case that the claim was completely valid in the amount of the policy limits. We're here today to deal with the central question, which is, having made that determination, can a UIM insurer nevertheless refuse to pay its insured unless that insured first takes care of another insurance company? The trial court found that that was unreasonable, and it found it was unreasonable for a variety of reasons. First and foremost, the trial court found that there was no provision in the contract between American Family and the Mahoneys that authorized American Family to do just that. Secondly, the trial court found that there was no statute or case authority that permitted or required American Family to impose this kind of condition as a function of paying a UIM claim. And lastly, the trial court found that there was no statute or case authority which would impose liability upon American Family if it paid its claim to its insured in accordance with its contract without imposing a payment condition upon them.
Apparently, Kaiser didn't agree with that because they asserted a claim for subrogation or lien. Is American Family not entitled to be concerned about that claim being asserted against it? Even though your argument is that he couldn't win, but don't they have a right to be concerned about that possibility of having to pay twice?
Well, let's break this down into a couple of pieces. The record reflects that there were only two points of contact between Kaiser and American Family. The first was a letter sent by Robert Kiesler, an attorney with Gibson & Sharpe. This is Plaintiff's Exhibit 18. It was sent to American Family. It asserted, if you will, kind of a global claim. It's subrogation, it's reimbursement, it's a lien. This was received by American Family, but nobody at American Family knew of it. They were not aware that Kaiser had in fact asserted a claim, notwithstanding the fact I had the letter in their file. Now, that is confirmed by the trial testimony of Ms. Grossman, who was the day-to-day adjuster, by Ms. Rucker, who was the adjuster supervisor, by Ms. Clemmy, who is the in-house attorney who advised American Family, and by Ms. Alsop, who was, I believe, the regional director whose authority or whose approval was necessary to pay the claim.
Mr. Zimmerman, maybe I'm confused, and correct me. I seem to recall that there, the day of this roundtable, there was an email that got sent from someone who was at the roundtable that said to the Mahoney's lawyer, then lawyer, we are not going to insist on this issue about the tortfeasor, but what are you going to do about the Kaiser claim? Am I mistaken about that? I thought there was an email to that effect. And that's the point at which it was Mr. Larson wrote back and said, you know, you can't
let me break it down if I can.
All right, please.
Okay. Yes, they were aware that Kaiser was involved in the case. They were aware of Kaiser's involvement as a result of having billing records for medical treatments and medical records itself. They had no knowledge that Kaiser was in fact asserting a claim of any kind at that point. We know this because there is a later contact. This is a contact on January 27, 2009, when somebody from Mr. Kiesler's office called American Family and talked to Ms. Grossman, the adjuster, said, what are you going to do about our claim? And Ms. Grossman's response, as reflected in the claim notes, was, we don't have anything on that. Please send us some information. This occurred after American Family had imposed the payment condition upon the Mahoney's right to receive benefits on January 19th and 20th.
A State Farm asserted the same condition, correct? State Farm was the tortfeasor's insurer, as I recall?
That's correct. What you're referring to is a letter that went from Mr. Kiesler to State Farm. That would be appropriate. Okay, that would follow the normal, customary rules of subrogation. They represent the tortfeasor. They're not in the same position as American Family, who's representing or insuring the victim of the tortfeasor's actions. Secondly, American Family didn't have a copy of that letter. They simply didn't know about it until it was produced in discovery. They would have no reason to know of that letter.
I guess what I'm trying to get at, Mr. Zimmerman, really picking up on Judge Nieto's question. I understand your argument, I think, pretty well. The problem I'm having, or the concern I'm having, is it really unreasonable for American Family to, you know, even they know they're out there, they've seen these other claims out there, to ask, you know, we don't want to get sued here. They know, the other side cited cases where there are subrogation claims here against the uninsured motorist coverage. It may well not be the law in Colorado, but doesn't that prove the point that they're not unreasonable if the law is unsettled?
Well, again, I need to unpack a few things here.
Please.
Okay. First of all, American Family had no internal evaluation of the claim that you're talking about. There's no internal white paper. There's no third-party legal opinion by outside counsel. There's no written policy with respect to these claims. There was no investigation when they became aware of this. They undertook no effort to try to find out what the nature of whatever Kaiser was asserting or could assert. They provided no explanation to the Mahoneys as to why they were doing what they were doing. And more importantly, there is nothing in the record before this court that shows that they were actually concerned about being sued at the time they imposed the condition.
Well, again, you know, I'm just trying to understand the facts, and I apologize. I mean, as I recall it, Mr. Larson was the lawyer below, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Mr. Larson sends back an email the same day he gets the email from American Family. He says, what about Kaiser? And he writes back and cites case law as to why there's no possible liability to Kaiser, and he cites the Crawl case, as I recall.
Correct.
I mean, he seemed to understand that there was a liability concern because he was responding that there was no possible liability. I mean,
his response with Crawl was they don't have an enforceable claim against anybody under Crawl.
So then he would understand that there was a claim.
About it.
Okay. Right, but what doesn't that suggest that Mr. Larson understood that American Family was concerned about a claim?
Well, in the world of insurance, people understand that there are subrogation claims and reimbursements and so on and so forth. So it's not a stretch by any imagination to think that there might be some subrogation or reimbursement claim floating around because this is an insurance case. What Mr. Larson was telling American Family was, whatever those claims are, you don't need to worry about it because Paul tells you you don't have to worry about it. Now, if I can go back to Judge Nieto's question again and complete my answer. Does American Family have to be worried about being sued by Kaiser? Well, I guess in sort of an abstract way, anybody can sue anybody for anything. So I don't know. I cannot tell the court that there is a 0% chance that for whatever reason, Kaiser might sue American Family. Under what theory, I have no idea. Whether they would be successful, I highly doubt it. But be that as it may be, there is actually a procedure in place to address these kinds of issues in Colorado, and it has worked relatively well. This is Ethics Opinion 94, which I provided to the court in my supplemental authorities. This ethics opinion directly addresses this type of situation, which is, if American Family had paid the Mahoneys the full value of their benefits, Mr. Larson would have been required to keep an amount in his trust account sufficient to satisfy the Kaiser claim until there was a resolution. In short, Judge Nieto, there's simply no reason for American Family to act as an arbiter between Kaiser and its insured, the Mahoneys. Now, the absence of legal authority is what the court relied upon. And when I talk about the absence of legal authority, the trial court spent a great deal of time considering, investigating, thinking about, and making determinations as to the viability of subrogation claims and reimbursement claims and the effects of liens. And it found that there was, in fact, no legal basis for Kaiser bringing a claim against American Family, notwithstanding this kind of abstract fear that American Family would have had. Again, there's nothing in the record that actually demonstrates that American Family was concerned at the time that it made the decision. In other words, this appears to be, based on the record before you, an argument that is created for your benefit to avoid liability as opposed to a real in-time fear of American Family at the time that it imposed the condition. Now, we know that because when we look at the evidence that was presented to the trial court, two employees of American Family gave different explanations as to why they did what they did. Ms. Rucker, who was the adjusting supervisor, said, we had to protect Kaiser. Ms. Clemmie, who is the attorney who advised Ms. Grossman and Ms. Rucker, said, well, we're worried about double liability. But when you look at her testimony, what she said was, if we only have medical records in our file, that is not enough for us to, quote unquote, take appropriate action, which is exactly what American Family had in this case because it did not know of the Kaiser letter. And on that basis, the court found that it wasn't fairly debatable. There was no evidence that they were actually concerned about it at the time. Now, I'd like to shift gears and talk briefly about, and very briefly, about the twice-covered benefits language. That's a simple matter of statutory construction. The statute directs that plaintiffs like the Mahoneys are entitled to recover twice the covered benefits, either upon delay or upon denial of a claim, one where payment is made, one where payment is not made. It is the same statutory award, irrespective of whether payment is made. That tells us a couple of things. It tells us first that American Family's argument that somehow we're receiving three times the benefit is inconsistent with the plain language of the statute. It also tells us that the statutory award is not related to actual damages. This is why the statute is a penal statute. And this is why, under subsection 4 of section 1116, it preserves the right of the plaintiff to pursue recoveries of those other monies under other causes of action. I'd like to swing now and talk, again, very briefly about the no duty to pay and the contract language in the American Family policy. Yes, I do believe that waiver fits very nicely. Waiver is the intentional relinquishment of a known right. That seems to be the case here. It can be either expressed or implied. And it certainly seems that the evidence demonstrates that American Family implied a waiver by conduct by not enforcing the provision. At the January 19th date when they said you're approved, you will pay your policy limits, but you got to take care of Kaiser. It wasn't, you got to take care of Kaiser, and you got to settle with a tortfeasor. And to me, that's telling that there was, in effect, a waiver. Now, we approached it in a little different way because it was presented to the trial court in a different way at a summary judgment hearing in January of 2011, last year. In that case, or in that hearing, the judge granted American Family's motion for summary judgment and prevented the Mahoneys from asserting any entitlement to bad faith damages as a result of a delay in payment based on that contract provision. We are here today with respect to a judgment that deals not with that particular contract provision, but American Family's insistence on imposing a payment condition. Finally, I'd like to talk a little bit about the right of Jacqueline Mahoney to maintain a cause of action. Bad faith is an independent, separate tort from the contract claim. There's no requirement for a bad faith common law claimant to have a contract claim in order to maintain that. If the duty under the tort was based on the contract claim, that is to say, a right to receive benefits, the tort claim would be barred by the economic loss rule, and we know that's not the case. Ergo, the duty is formed by the existence of a contract and the parties in privity to the contract, and it is breached when the performance of those duties is in bad faith. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Zimmer. Sutton, please. You do, a minute and 9 seconds.
The idea in the state of Colorado is to promote settlement. Settlement of the entire claim and not piecemeal settlements of claims. And plaintiff's argument is sort of form over substance. The resolution of subrogation claims, the evidence at the trial was that that's the custom and standard in the industry. And Mahoney did not disagree that there was a claim. He said it was not enforceable because of the make whole doctrine and that he was not going, he was going to take the position they were not entitled to any benefits. He wanted American Family to designate the funds as non-economic in order to get around the Kaiser claim, to say, oh, we don't have official notice to get out of the Kaiser claim. American Family did not do that. American Family did not have the duty to rely upon plaintiff's counsel to protect its interests.
American Family know of the claim? I mean, I guess
that's
the response.
That's why it said, to, what are you going to do about the Kaiser claim? Again, the FAM case, where the coverage issues are complicated and the uncertainty is present, it compels the conclusion that American Family did not act in bad faith. Likewise, the Sanderson case, even if...
And your time's up. You can finish your sentence here, Ms.
Even if the insurer does turn out to be wrong, Sanderson supports American Family's position. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Sutton, again. Thank you, Mr. Zimmerman. We thank both counsel for your arguments today. They're very helpful to the court and as well for your briefs. That case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.